Ladies and gentlemen, this is Scott.
Actually, that should be the start of the podcast. It's just, do you want to go ahead and give the podcast an intro? You were doing it.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to the Every Plant Story podcast, where we collect, share, and discover the stories, lessons, and passions behind the people who are always growing more. You're listening to the Every Plant Story podcast, and here is your host, Shane.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the Every Plant Story podcast. I'm going to be honest, we're going to get straight away into this podcast episode. It's with a good friend, Derek, from the Houseplant Co. So we'll go ahead and jump into that interview now. How's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good, Shane. Can't complain a bit. How about yourself?
It's way too hot in Florida. I will guarantee you that. Way too hot in Florida. I got to ask some questions, though, because our listeners are going to be new to you, potentially. Maybe not. You know, we'll see.
Oh, but, probably.
How did you get started in the industry? Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I went to... I just basically worked for my parents through high school. My stepdad owned a construction company that I was pretty involved with outside of school for roughly about 10 years or so. And somewhere in that decade, my mother started a nursery, super, super small. It started with a tiny little 10 by 10 greenhouse on her porch.
Fantastic. And, I love that.
Yeah. So some things happened and she thought that she could really enjoy doing that. So she built the first greenhouse, and over the years ended up getting concrete in it and whatnot, and slowly adding new greenhouse on new greenhouse on new greenhouse. And I would work for her during the summer months once it started to become an actual business that required some extra help around. So I kind of juggled the two of those throughout summertime. It was always seasonal, so that was good for her. And then I could get back to the construction. But I always wanted – I loved building. I loved construction. I loved being able to put my ideas into something physical. And my stepdad told me there's no way that you want to do construction for the rest of your life. I'm telling you right now you don't because it's – pretty physically intensive, but he said, if you like this, you want to be in an air conditioned room drawing it. So I ended up going to college for architecture. And by the end of my 2-year degree, I was set to transfer. And my mom kind of just said, hey, you know, it's a shame none of you boys want to take over this business I've created, it blah, blah, blah. And so we got chatting about it. And I went back to school and got my horticulture degree, which was part of the agreement.
Oh, see, you already did more than I did. See, my dad just told me, like, hey, it would be a shame if we just threw away these, you know, couple thousand Boston fern hanging baskets in the back of the greenhouse. I guess you should just do it, you know, tomorrow. But so you had some like foresight. You actually had to go to school for it, or
It was my choice. I kind of compared at that point in my life. I was probably only like 23 or so, so I really wasn't too sure where I'd end up and what I was doing, you know, just kind of throwing myself at stuff and just kind of compared architect salary starting out versus what she was currently making, which in just a few months turned out to be, I thought for sure, I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to be able to go into this and work for 5 months of the year, and then the rest of the year, I'm just going to not have anything to do, and it'll be phenomenal.
Right, because all the sales are condensed into a particular, you know, we have, you know, the spring season, the fall season, but whether you're in a hot part of the country or in a super, super cold part of the country, you think it's just a part-time job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we'd always close down at the end of like July, and maybe we'd open up for some mums or something during the fall. But then that was it. And I was like, all right, so I'm making that kind of salary for 5-6 months of the year, and then I can implore other options. And it does turn out that wasn't quite the case with the direction we went, for sure.
Right. No, just like my dad with the Boston Ferns, which was just ever labeled as spring, right? Like, just like, yeah. Hey, sell through the spring. Before you know it, it's been 4 years and you've learned a ton. I got to say, though, your business is one that has an amazing reputation within the plant community, which isn't easy to achieve. What has surprised you most in the last couple years? Yep. Describe kind of you getting into it, because I imagine if you're anything like my parents or my dad, who operated off a fax machine, which I've joked about in previous podcasts, you know, like I can explain to you how an email and a web app works, and like how, you know, our automation for what gets watered when and blah 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 works. Telephone created a picture on the fax machine, I will never understand. I just know it was a technology that worked.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
Describe
kind of questions.
Exactly. But that's also the experience and the passion and the, you know, that we've had for like the industry over the past several years. Kind of explain how you made the business your own.
Well, you asked, I guess, right off the bat, what kind of surprised me. I'll tell you, the very first thing that surprised me was when my mom told me that she had made $500 in one day just selling some of her houseplant collection on like this Facebook page. And I was like, what? Because at that time, that was like a week's paycheck.
Right. When you have a roommate, you're like, yeah, that's rent, utilities, and everything else in 2014.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
Exactly. So I looked at what she was talking about. I was like, holy cow. We had a wholesaler up here. And
up here, where we're just clarifying.
Oh,
where
sure,
are
we? Sure. Yeah. We're in upstate New York. So
okay,
it's
cool. Continue.
It's very seasonal. So there was a wholesaler up here where we had gotten like succulents and stuff for garden center season, but they also had a lot of really, really common, like 3-inch cup foliage plants. Just, he was like a florist. So we'd throw 10 of them in a pot and sell it as an arrangement. So I went up there and I started buying these little cups from him and shelling them out on this online thing. And people couldn't get enough. They were plants that weren't necessarily super rare, but they weren't in like the normal house, you know, plant section at like Lowe's or Home Depot. And I came across a philodendron. He gets all of his stuff, obviously, from Florida. And it was a philodendron brandiatum. Mm-hmm. And at that time, those plants, people were buying them for $100 and something a piece online. And that was probably my very first big surprise. I was like, people are paying $100 for a single little plant. It was just unfathomable to me. So that, you know, I've always been kind of like I'd like to consider myself a bit of an entrepreneur. So initially it was that got me involved. And I looked at all the names and everything though, of like all the different kinds of house plants. And I was like, holy cow. It was just so overwhelming at first, but now I know them like the back of my hand. And that's, the only ones I've steered clear of are the Hoya names, just because
there's a new one every day. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned that you kind of like started selling. Is the Facebook groups thing? I know you eventually built more greenhouses there specifically to expand your business, which is the Houseplant Co. If people haven't checked it out, they definitely should. Or follow Derek on Instagram. We'll link that in the bio, all that kind of good stuff. But like, what have you done to kind of expand upon your mom's first, oh my God, can you believe
sure.
it? I made some money on a Facebook group.
Right, right. So seeing that, we dove into sales and everything, and you know, we just kept ramping it up and ramping it up. And my mom only ever heated one house throughout the wintertime just for our succulent carryover and some of her personal plants. So we ended up going fully into this thing. My first year owning the business, all the money I'd made from the garden center season, I took all of it and threw it down into Florida and had a tractor trailer load, California stacked.
Yeah.
All the way up. Yeah, it was so packed, Shane. I got Tetrasperma for $6 a piece. So I think I bought 400 of them, Shane, just because I was like, everybody in the world wants one of these things right now.
What year are you talking about? What year are you talking about?
Oh, I think this was 2019. It was 2020, maybe one of those two years.
What we would think the when the world went to crap. I don't know if you know anything
Big Bang.
Yeah, exactly. Big Bang. Before, you can't say certain words without getting penalized on certain social media platforms. I learned that later after writing a heartfelt letter that said apparently the season vocabulary that we went through too often in the post. So
I've had my fair share of apologies written as well.
100%. But Big Bang, before Big Bang, that's what's cool about your story. You were there, you know, it wasn't just, oh, my mom made money after the Big Bang.
Right.
You were there pre-Big Bang trying to make sure that your business was set up for success.
Sure. Yep. Exactly. It was, looking back, it was only three years ago, but it was the good old days already, you know? I ended up having to heat a bunch of different greenhouses throughout the wintertime and buying shade cloths and going through and really learning the whole time, because I could grow you a petunia or a geranium. I mean, it's just easy. And then you get into these houseplants and they want more of this and less of that. And the soil mix is different for this kind. And I'm like, oh, so it was such a learning process. But
the minimum temperature for this plant is X, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, 100%.
And heating upstate New York, where we get to like negative 20 degrees during the wintertime. We saw an increase in the heat bill, and it was just, there's been a lot of learning. So kind of the heat bill pushed me to build a new huge greenhouse, because we're juggling space in the spring with the house plants. Now we don't have enough room to start our babies for garden center season. And it's like just one problem after another. Good problems to have, of course. But one of your prompted questions was the biggest fail. And this will kind of lead right into that. But
we're already getting the biggest fail.
We'll save it for later. But I think it was last spring, and they all met together pretty quick. But we built a 15,000 square foot five bay gutter connect out back. And it was probably a little bit more space, but I knew that we were consistently growing. So I wanted to build extra. I didn't have to use it all, but that's kind of, I've over doubled the facility. I put my house right on it, which I think was also a mistake.
As somebody who's only 0.2 miles away from the main location, I can say that it's a blessing in the winter, because heaven forbid, I mean, knock on wood, right?
Yep.
I'll make some knocking sounds, but you can be there much faster than you would otherwise be. However, it's hard to separate work and home when you're talking less than a mile.
It's the first thing I see every morning when I wake up. Is just
that's your home. Okay, so for listeners, I'm not releasing this on video. Obviously, we haven't quite gotten there with the podcast. But if you were able to see the FaceTime call I'm having with Derek right now, outside of it, is this your office? Is this your bedroom?
This is the living room.
Living room. And kitchen. Okay, so his kitchen, honestly, I'm going to have to show my wife this later. I'm going to need some photos for after this.
All right.
Because,
all right.
You know, that's my goal right there. Like
yeah,
a greenhouse that can,
architectural design.
A greenhouse that can see the tops of every, you know, a home that can see the tops of every greenhouse we own. I mean, there's nothing better than that. That's fantastic.
No, the commute is phenomenal. I will say that.
I love it. So, you know, that's how you got into it. What do you love most about it? What do you, you know, and by it, I mean owning and operating. I think where both of us, which, you know, you're not in the state of Florida, but in the state of Florida, there's a lot of wholesale nurseries. There's a bunch of foliage
sure.
growers. There's a bunch of, you know, garden center type, you know, landscaping growers, but not many whose kind of sole source is direct to consumer, you know, online, which I know
sure.
is a huge portion of your sales. Through a bunch of different, you know, Facebook groups, your website. If people haven't checked out the Houseplant Co., they definitely should because Derek is a stand-up guy. But what do you like most in that work? What's most challenging? Kind of describe your day-to-day having made it to where you are right now.
Easy enough. What I absolutely love most, there's probably two things. One, and I know it sounds incredibly cliched, but it is the customers. And because of doing these live auctions, I've got this old gal out of the middle of the country, somewhere's out kind of western. She has been in my lives since I very first started, and she rarely misses one. Like if she's not in there, I'm genuinely worried if something has happened to her because she has been there since the very beginning. And I have so many people who have followed along, and with the live auctions, it's like super, you know, I can talk to you specifically and, you know, this and that. Just the relationships there and like going and like I went to AIS last year and met a ton of these people. And it was no different than when I bumped into Brett in the bathroom. I was like, I probably shouldn't ask for a picture right here in the bathroom, you know, but it was, but it's very cool. That aspect, but as far as the plant portion goes, for me, it's propagating and new leaf development is just, I can't walk by a plant on the, you know, without going over there and looking at that new leaf just and every, like, especially on some of the more uncommon or variegated or colorful plants, everyone is so different. So realistically it's fine. And also like if I get in a plug tray or something from Florida, right. And there's that, I'll go through 30 trays and looking for just one little sport variegated plant and just, and then growing it out and creating a mother stock and stuff like that. It's all very rewarding. So that's gotta be my favorite part, hands down, is cutting stuff up, watching it grow. Just, you can see the progress. You leave for a week, you come back, you got a whole new set of leaves to look
at.
Oh
man. And you have a whole new dozen problems that have happened from everything you should have trimmed a week ago. It's hard to take a week off as a, you know, a full-time grower, but I love that part of your story because I feel like that's part of what's made my story, you know, marketable, if you want to, you know, use that
sure.
phrase, is like, I grew up in this. Like I tell the story often in local greenhouse tours that I only filled pots in dad's greenhouse, you know, a couple hundred feet from the back door of the house, you know, in the backyard, because I needed gas money as a high schooler. And we all know that you need
right.
to get to Taco Bell. I mean, why? I can't explain, right? But you just need to get there. So, you know, I grew up, you know, being involved in it, but never at the business operation level that you and I have had. How big is your team? What are you most proud of in what you've done the last couple of years?
I think so. My team, we do float around depending on garden center or not, but in off season where we focus primarily on the house plants and the online stuff, we've got 9 employees. We got a couple at our house plant shop, about 3 shippers, and a head grower. My mother does all of our online invoicing and customer service.
I love that.
It's awesome. And she loves it too, because she's always been very much a people person. And when I bought the greenhouse from her, she lost a big part of community and like being involved with people. And this position is perfect because she's a snowbird now. She comes and visits you every winter, and she can do it from there as well. So, but no, we've got a phenomenal team, I would say.
That's amazing. I know one of the questions we had, you know, and I'm thankful to be your friend in the industry because I'm just so I admire so much what you've been able to do.
Thank you.
And we keep track because as we've talked about previously, and we've said on the podcast episodes previously with other sellers or just our own testimony, like, yeah, when you're the stereotypical Reddit post of somebody rolling up their garage and it's 7 feet under snow, you're like, I don't necessarily blame you for not buying a tropical plant, you know, in January of 2023 in Wisconsin. You know, it tracks. And, you know, you and I have kept up with how the industry is going. What is your kind of state of the industry? Where do you think it's headed? Where do you think you have the most opportunity in the future? Because I will say, and I know there's been previous people who have said it about us at a time or two, or customers that will brag on us. So whenever you feel a compliment, you're like, oh, I got to pass this along to somebody else. But I have never seen somebody have a negative feedback with your business that you're running. And that says
something. We hunt them down, Shane. We hunt them down.
I know, as do I, you know, if it, which I think is just like that real, when you're passionate about what you do, you always want to make it right. There is no middle ground.
There's no if, ands, or buts about it. The key to having good rapport is, yes, it sucks sometimes. You know, if I get in an import from a different country and half of it dies, nobody's madder than I am about it. And I expect those people to replace it. So when I pass it along and I resell it after we've grown it a bit, and if something terrible happens, whether it be their fault, our fault, the shipping company's fault, it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. The customer, something my mom always told me, the customer's always right. I do have a little bit of play with that these days, but we aim to, within reason, to make everybody happy. I mean, some people obviously are to be watched out for, and
sure,
you learn that going through it as well. But most everybody's just looking to get the plant that they thought they were getting, you know.
My dad said, if it's a customer you shouldn't take care of, they shouldn't be your customer. And beyond that, you take care of them. End of story. I mean,
it couldn't have been said any better.
Yeah, pretty easy. But, you know, for people who are obviously like, who knows what happens when it shipped through Nevada at 111 degrees, you and I both are like, well, we'll take our chances. You know, it's.
Yeah, exactly.
But where do you think the industry is headed? I love this conversation, by the way. I think our listeners will really be loving this too.
Yeah. The industry has been, and I guess we can call this the aftermath of the big boom. It's been incredibly interesting. I see prices becoming more affordable, which is obvious when I can take one plant and cut it up into 20 plants. That also means that everybody else in the world and at home, and everybody can do it. It is not, I don't want to say that the industry is easy, because it's certainly not. It's full of challenges, but I see a lot of at home people getting involved with their hobby and turning it into a little business. And I think that's fantastic. That's basically my starting story as well. I had the benefit of my parents owning a greenhouse to start it, but I've seen prices come down. Things are more available. A lot of breeding is happening, and I think that's going to be a big future point is the new varieties, because if the rest of the country is anything like me, I always am looking for that next best thing. What's cool? What's new? So I don't foresee the industry going anywhere by any means at all. I think houseplants have been popular forever, and I think that they always will be. I think we got a lot of tag along as it being like that cool hip thing, super trendy. But I think that also birthed a lot of good customer relationships, that those people, maybe they don't want 200 houseplants anymore, but maybe they'll always have some, you know. It's not going anywhere.
I love that about not maybe buying the same quantity you once did, because my grandparents were, I mean, obviously different generation. I'm recording this podcast from their home. I bought their home, built more greenhouses, yeah, even beyond my, you know, my dad's property, a couple driveways around the corner. But, you know, maybe in 07 when their 401k dipped, you know, a little bit too far for what they were comfortable with, did they plant the same garden, or maybe did they have quite as big of a petunia on their front yard? No, you know, it was 2007. Sure. It was 2008. You know, they kind of scaled back. Did they ever vary away from being gardeners at heart, orchid people at heart? No, it stuck with them for the rest of their lives. And so we all go through seasons, whether a business owner or a consumer, where, yeah, you're in between jobs. Please, is the difference between you paying your electric bill and buying one of Derek's plants, please, or our plants, please don't sacrifice your electric bill for one of us. Right. Like, please don't.
It's crazy that you say that too, Shane, because it does feel sometimes like that's what's going on, because it is a live interaction. You know, people are like, oh, I really shouldn't be in here, or like, you know, oh, I can't help myself, this is dangerous. It is something you gotta battle, and it's not just plants, it's everything in life. You gotta find a good balance, but people eventually get there. But we've had horror stories of people just buying, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of plants and then not being able to pay for them, or, you know, you do got to be responsible with it, because it is super addicting collecting plants.
100%. And my point though is, even if you're somebody who's, you know, contemplating that, wait 2 years. You're not going to it. Like, if my life is any testimony, you're not going to like plants any less. You're not going to buy any less 2 years from now. Sometimes you're just going through a hard season. That's not the season to have extra expenses, you know?
And hey, if you can wait 2 years, there's a pretty good chance that really expensive plant you want is going to be a lot more affordable.
Oh, 100%. You and I have talked on, you know, at length about just the craziness of, I mean, I was watching back to an article in an interview I did in 2019, again, pre-big boom, quote unquote, about just like, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, the largest two or three retailers of Pink Princess will be putting them in a Home Depot. And boy, I was wrong. I was wrong on that one. But what I said it to somebody else who asked me about it, like, hey, do you think this really threatens, you know, your business? They were really concerned about, you know, because we were one of the largest growers of Pink Princess from cuttings at one point. And they were like, you know, is this concerning to you? And I said, no, because in a year, even if it's mass available now, it's not going to be at your Lowe's and Home Depot next year. You know what I mean? So it's a constant evolving cycle. And I know that you, like me, are always looking out for like next big plants. Do you have any predictions on what maybe the next big plant?
Honestly, I watch stuff pretty closely and I have no idea.
Same. I don't know if that makes you feel any better, but I'm in the exact same boat with you.
I think so obviously tissue culture has been a huge game changer for the industry, for you and I, all the way to the wholesalers, to the customer. It is kind of leveling it out. It's like everybody wants a Ferrari, let's just say, and all of a sudden somebody puts a Ferrari in a jar and they've now got a million Ferraris.
Yeah, and it makes a thousand Ferraris. Dude, I would say though, if that was a business model, you and I should be canning Ferraris far more often.
Well, I didn't want to give away any trade secrets, but
maybe we'll have to talk a little bit after this then.
But no, it's just that, like for example, Monstera Mint, how crazy and cool looking is that? How crazy expensive is that? And now there's been an interesting step where it used to just go from the lab to the grower, and then the grower would sell it wholesale or to the customer as a final finished product. A huge thing that's happened is we're getting kind of like a whole group of people who are now creating an extra step in there, basically selling off the juvenile plants or the TCs, even still in jars. And obviously they can afford to sell them for less because they haven't gone through all the work to get them where they've got to go. And so it's leaving the people who are doing it traditionally, probably with a few extra plants on the bench, to be honest. And it also is kind of taking that price point and pulling it from, you know, where it's at way down because they're selling it for so much cheaper. And the more exposure that price gets, it kind of brings the whole thing right down with it. So what's the next big thing? It seems like by the time you see that cool new plant, and it's mostly over in Asia. I mean, I know the whole world's doing it, but it just seems like, boom, man, they are on it. As soon as that new plant comes out, they've got them in TC. And by the time you even see the first one for sale, they've already got, you know, 1,000 of them growing in a jar somewhere, you know? So it's a moving target for sure.
Yeah. And it also, I think you feel this way too. There are certain plants, maybe from certain vendors, that you're like, oh, well, I could offer X species. Am I confident though that either the way that I'm having to buy it in, like pre-TC plantlets and grow it out, like what's going to be my success rate? Or worse, for the people who are selling those TC direct to consumer, if you don't have great humidity and the right environment to be able to nurture those plants, I do feel like over time people do, you know, there's a reason why your established garden center in your, if you're listening from this from Kansas City, and maybe you don't order from Derek, maybe you don't order from us at Gabriella, but still you go to your garden center because you assume that's an established plant. There's been an influx of, I don't want to call it pre-established, but, you know, pre-established plants on the market, which for some people who are trying to get nerdy, which don't get me wrong, you and I have been nerdy about a lot of stuff, but it's a different ball game to what we want to offer our customers.
But it's like, you know, like anything, when I first started, I had no idea what I was doing, but through a lot of failures and some successes, now I would like to think I've got a pretty good idea, and there's certainly still an absolute ton that I could continue to learn off from. But it comes around, like with the TC anyways, growing it in that environment, once you get it right, pretty typically it's just high humidity, low light, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you got to care for something a little bit closer when they're juvenile plants than the oak tree in your front yard. You don't think about much, you know, the thing that's obviously in less than a quarter cup, if you're measuring flour worth of soil. Yeah, you got to pay a little bit more attention to that plant. What do you think has been different about the industry this year versus maybe even the last couple years since the quote unquote, Derek quote, big boom?
I think, honestly, it's from where I've been sitting. I think with so many of the varieties, you know, being exposed pretty regularly to the market and people having a really easy availability to find things like the internet supplies. I think the surprises are kind of all off. You know, there's the occasional, whoa, that plant, never seen that. But the surprises are over. People know what's out there, and they can really fine tune what it is that they're after. But the number one thing, and I think it'll always kind of be the number one thing for any business, is new customers coming in and having that totally adolescent, knowledge of the trade and in the hobby and, looking on Facebook and seeing a pink princess and saying, what is that? You know, where, it's just that constant, people are moving in, people are slowing down or like moving out. But it's one of those things where, like, once you have one plant, you need another plant. And it's just like, it's almost, I don't want to call it a sickness because it's not, but if I have 20 plants and my friend comes over, I'm like, here, just take this one. And they're like, oh, okay. And they get a new leaf out of it. And it's just like, boom. You know, there's always going to be new customers. And I think for this year, where so much in the past we had relied on a lot of the same customers that, you know, we were always getting in new stuff, blah, blah, blah. Those people still do it, but they've got everything that I have to offer, you know. And every time I get something new, they'll pop back in and grab something. But it's the newcomers, and as much as it is the longtime customers, you know what I'm saying? But this year we've gotten a lot of new. It's nice to be able to look at like the website and see like the insights on sales, and
sure,
it just shows this year has been an incredible amount of new people jumping in or just discovering me.
They're discovering you, or maybe you will, you know, feel the same way in this regard. We've seen a ton of what we used to call bread and butter, which anything at Gabriella called bread and butter was basically just to describe that my dad had previously grown it in the 17 species. We're talking like the old school Marble Queen, the Jade Pothos, the Prince Orange hybrid philodendron. But if your grandma was the one, I mean, I can recall in the last 3 months, maybe 4 emails, not to be exaggerating in any regard. And that's not, you know, totally representative of either one of our, you know, total orders placed in the last 3 months. But just like, oh, my grandma, you know, passed away, unfortunately. But she always had a Marble Queen hanging basket in her front yard. She always had a spider plant. She always had a, you know, a Boston fern. It may not be what we consider rare in the industry, but there is a continuation of wanting to make that tradition happen. And I love that. It's in some ways a rejuvenation of what to most foliage garden centers would call, bread and butter or traditional plants. You know, not everybody is after the Monstera Albo. Although I do have to say, how many Monstera Albos? Because that was like 6 months of your live streams. It was like, I've got Monstera Albos for days. How many Monstera Albos did you get into a loving home? How many were adopted?
Oh my goodness. So obviously it's a real finicky plant. So a good handful of them made their way right into the grave.
That's growing right there for you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, there's always losses. We ended up, I think, about 130 albos from that order there ended up finding new homes out of 200. And we had a pretty heavy loss, but again, my supplier replaces those. So we've got another one coming in. They're a little bit of a pushy supplier, as in like, hey, come on, you know, but they want me to take quantity to, you know, keep any, you know, I can't just be like, I'll just take, you know, 50 this time. You know, they're like, well, the price is higher if you only take 50. I'm like, come on. So,
right. Well, because when they're looking at a greenhouse of 9,000 of them, they're like, I mean, but isn't 1,000 better than 500? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, no, we just now started, and they were always kind of out of reach for me. Just the price point. They're still really, really expensive plants to get in. But everybody loves them. And I think this next round might be my last purchase in. I might actually try to hold this last round and kind of mother them up just to kind of ride that out and propagate from that. I've always wanted my own mother stock, but they've always been so expensive, you know, and they still are really, but.
Yeah, no, 100%. What I have to ask, because I don't know about you. We get it sometimes whenever we do, like, ask me anything live streams or something to that effect. But what if somebody wants to start a plant store, wants to start a greenhouse, what are your biggest tips to somebody who wants to follow in Derek's footsteps?
Yep. So my biggest tips, there's a lot of things to look at. Starting with where your location is. And that's a primal example here, being in upstate New York, where we get just terribly frigid winters. That will kind of determine whether you should be looking really to take your business online versus having a more locally community centralized business. Obviously look at like the demographic around you. Are there a bunch of college kids? Because that really does seem to be kind of where the most in-person business comes from is. Well, I mean, we get a lot of, you know, middle-aged people as well. But it does seem as if the college scene kind of breeds that we love plants kind of thing for like an in-person business. The online aspect is you have rein to so many outlets to just find plant people. You know, they're all in one place and they're all in a million places. But so that would be step one. If you're looking, my number one thing is, and I ignored this advice numerous times coming from my parents, stay small and really only take that next move when you can't continue to do business under what you currently have available to use. I thought about wholesale. I thought about this. I thought about, you know, so many things. And just because I thought about those things, they were such a reality to me that I went and built an absolute giant greenhouse to handle all this crazy amount of sales that I thought that I would have. And just being in New York up here, I mean, we're literally in a town. I'm looking out my window, I can't see a single other house. There's woods everywhere. We've got maybe 2,000 people in the town total, maybe 1,200. But I can't just pop up a stand, you know, at the end of the road and be like, hey, we got houseplants, you know? So, but we're not even using a lot of that space now in the off season. And by building, I wanted to build it 12 foot tall, Shane, so I could put double rows of hanging baskets and growing the longest trailing plants. And, it really just turned into, I built tons of extra volume and height to heat throughout the winter. And I really went big, and I am currently in the process of going back too small because not so much in business going back to small, but like in the space that I needed.
Sure. 100%.
You just fine tune things over the years. I would say the benefit of the full age thing for our business as a whole is there is no true shut off. We ship plants throughout the winter, probably more than we do in some summer months. It's a year round interest. You got to be able to treat yourself anytime you want. But seasonally, I do see some people kind of hold off to buy during the winter because maybe they've had a bad experience and they don't really trust that process. Shane, growing and having things take time, and I always beat myself up when we get down to the last five of something that I've been growing for like 4 months. I'm like, oh God, they're finally all gone. Now I've got to buy more and start them all over again. You know, it's like alocasias, man. I have gone through so many alocasias and they do take quite a little while to get ripping, some of the more the jewel type ones. And then once they're gone, it's like, starting over. Or same with like anthuriums, like the podophyllum. I don't know if you guys have seen those guys come through. It just now, you know, I don't know how long I've been growing them. It seems like forever, but they're starting to get that mature shape to the leaves. And I sold a bunch when they didn't have mature shape to the leaves. And now I'm maybe down to my last, you know, 5 to 10. And I'm like, I just got to see them, you know, and then they're gone. I'd like to keep one of everything as like the last one that sells, just so I can have that big plant and see kind of what its potential is. But I'm the king of tangents, so I probably have lost whatever exact road we were talking about, but
no, this is the podcast, especially self-directed by Shane. I mean, I'm tangent king over here. All right. How do people follow more about what you're doing? How do they catch up with what you're listing? I mean, you have an amazing website, so many species available on there. I know you do a ton of Instagram lives, Facebook lives. What is the website bigger picture to you?
Yeah.
How do people get connected with you?
So I basically try to pull as many people to my Instagram as possible. Back, you know, I saw you doing it. I saw a bunch of other people having these online websites and I was like, I need to jump on that. And so I spent all kinds of money making a nice, pretty website. But because we were also doing lives at the same time, and that's so much more interactive and you have an immediate audience that you can rely on from 8 o'clock to midnight, you know, there's just people in there ready to buy instead of, you know, hoping somebody crosses an ad somewhere and comes over and actually goes through all your stuff and finds something. So we would load the website and, you know, we'd sell a few things here and there for us as a, you know, not a very well-known website. And then it turned into everything we loaded on there. We were needing to now sell on the Instagram lives and stuff like that because we didn't have any more that weren't set aside for the website, but nobody was buying them from there. So it became almost not worth it for us to continually load our website up. I would love to get back to that. We've started slowly working towards more of that. But where can people find me? Where can people follow what we're up to is definitely the Instagram. We try to post wherever.
Yeah, give your Instagram handle. Don't trust they're going to the comments. Trust they're listening right now.
Yeah, so it's at Plants with Dirt, spelled exactly how it sounds, just no spaces, no numbers or anything, just Plants with Dirt. My nickname throughout high school used to be Dirt. Everybody in
I'm
town.
I'm jealous of that. You know, see, I was homeschooled, so I never got the high school nickname, but I'm pretty sure it would have been like Green Bean or something to refer to how skinny I was overall in life.
Well,
but
they referred to how smelly I was as a teenager. My older brother gifted me that nickname. So it wasn't anything special. I hated it at first, but it grew on me. But and now it works phenomenally that I ended up in horticulture. So, but yeah, no, we're always over there on Instagram doing something or other, giveaways or whatever, but that's where you can find.
Now, I know we teased it earlier in this podcast, but I told you earlier, you know, you were like, we were talking back and forth, like, what do you want to talk about on this podcast, blah, 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 blah. And we were both like, and honestly, I got to give credit to my wife, who reminded me that one of the only consistent questions we've asked every single podcast guest that we've had on this podcast is, and it's mainly meant to be like a humbling experience, because I think a lot of people, less about me, I advertise myself as a buffoon, you know, but Brett advertised himself as somebody who knew everything. And I think a lot of the guests we have on, you know, you just assume they're seasoned pros and they never have a loss. They never kill a plant. They never have a pest problem. They never have any of these things. So one of the questions I like to ask, like as a humbling statement, is like, what is the biggest plant crop or plant woe, whether it's pest, disease, maybe winter when the heaters didn't kick on? Like everyone has had a problem with a plant. It's a universal, but in all your years, what has been your biggest mistake?
Oh, we've definitely run out of fuel a couple times here and there throughout the winter and had to fire on 10 salamanders just to keep it 45 degrees in there, which isn't anywhere near where it needs to be. Yeah. We're fighting zero all winter. So, it's an annual thing, you know, sometimes things fail or God forbid, I haven't had any, luckily, knock on wood, issues with this yet, but if the power went out, Shane, I would be done.
Do you have a generator? See, I come from hurricane weather. So, you know, generator testing a week before the last hurricane that just hit Florida. We were firing up the generators, getting them loaded on carts just in case we needed power. But the power loss up in the Northeast or even some of the Midwest, that's not the expected thing. I just, as a 2004 hurricane Charlie survivor with 2.5 weeks of no power, from then on, we were just like, nope, we're going to have a generator. We're going to have a way to do power. Yeah. New York doesn't have that lesson learned every 12 months.
That's right. That's right. And I am one of those guys that has to learn no matter how many times I'm warned or told or given advice. I learn the hard way. It's the only way I learn. But that kind of leads into, my biggest failures in business are looking so far into the future instead of so much at like right now, in building these, you know, these greenhouses that I don't have any business filling just yet, thinking about the future plans and not, you know, I really wish I had gone about half the size and actually filled it with the automatic irrigation systems and something to kind of take some of the weight off, you know, something to almost doing it right instead of, if I could use the analogy, half-assing it. I'm just go instead of take care of it, figure out the best way and implement it right now instead of buying that shiny new thing, you know?
And I think it's hard for people like us who are around before. I mean, you and I have talked at length. I've had the same, you know, not only with physical structures, but just with team, you know what I mean? Size and different things. We were constantly trying to keep up with, you know, the Big Bang phenomenon and making sure that the last couple of years we didn't let an order go, you know, a week and a half before it got shipped, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, when it resorts back to what the industry is kind of always operated as, there's some adjustment periods in that. I love that transparency. plug again, like, where people can tune in? Because I know, you know, I bought in some of your plants personally.
Sure. Yep. So it's the hub, basically, to find out anything about what's going on with us is our Instagram page at Plants with Dirt. That's where you can find us. One quick thing, Shane, about largest failures. Years ago, I entered some things into tissue culture and waited, like we talked about. It takes a while for everything to grow. So I almost feel like I waited about 2 years to get some of these plants out. And some labs are bigger than others and require larger minimums. And this one specific lab required about 1,000 per month, which is more than I would ever think that I would need. But I wanted to make the deal so bad, so I went with it. So I started getting in thousands and thousands. And then another plant became available now. And I was getting thousands and thousands of those. And I'm just sitting there growing them on the bench thinking, when they're big, I'll hit up somebody. Somebody is going to take all of these plants away from here to a faraway place. And as I was growing probably close to 10,000 of maybe just two different varieties, we were in the midst of garden center season where we have tons of plants coming in. We grow all of our own, but once we run out of some, we have to buy some in from other places and just kind of fill the last holes for the rest of the season. Well, must be from somewhere came a thrip that had an impatient spot virus. And anything viral, obviously, is not curable in plants. So at least as far as I know, some things you just got to admit defeat early on before you just bury yourself. But this was at first I didn't really know what it was. It was just kind of like some yellow kind of spots on the leaves. And I was like, oh, you know, we'll put these few over here. We'll keep an eye on them. And then just being so busy with both the online and the garden center, it took me a little while. And I wasn't sure if it was just like water sitting on the leaf at night or something, maybe too cool. And maybe this was just some leaf damage. Instead of acting extremely fast, because I didn't really know what exactly it was, but it didn't look like that bad. Over about a month's worth of time, I would go in there and I'd look, and it was just all over these 10,000 plants that I've been growing.
Don't tell me.
You listen, Shane. You gotta hear that stuff. So I had one of my employees go in there. I was like, all the ones that look like this, put them over here. All the ones that are good, leave them on the bench. And I came in the next day and there was like two trays.
I was going to say 65 that were disease free.
I was like, oh my God. I was like, just get them out of here. They're probably sick too. But yeah, that was, I think I probably lost about $20,000 to $30,000 worth of plants and labor and time into those. So,
man, I'm so sorry.
That was
to hear
probably
that.
My biggest loss.
No, 100%.
Part of it.
But what my whole point is, when somebody freaks out about, like, and we're not talking about a plant from either one of our nurseries, right? We're just talking about the seasonal change. All of a sudden, two of your plants have spider mites, and they're wondering what, you know, has to happen. Even the best of the best, we'll lose some crops. There'll be some things that get out of control. Like, we're no, I don't want to say no better, because we obviously wouldn't ship a plant with pests to a customer. But have we experienced it? Absolutely, we have.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to catch every microscopic little bugger running around, you know, and we do everything we can. I know that you've got a pesticide schedule, as do I. And what I learned in college is it's never about eradication with pest management. It's about controlling the population, because in reality, you're never going to eradicate entire species from a large greenhouse facility, but you just constantly try to find the hot zones. And if something you know, when you notice it, spray. When you notice it, spray, and just keep on that schedule. And this year we've gotten so much better because nothing, obviously, against Florida, but we stopped buying in so many foliage plants and started importing or growing a lot more tissue culture. Even tissue culture can come in with pests, but
I'm so thankful that you chose to spend this time with me and Jane, give us a little
I've
bit of
your
input.
I've been watching you since I first, I had my eye on you and your guys' business since I first started. And even the fact that you asked me to be on was like, my mom, for me, I guess, is the only one who I can share the excitement of coming on this podcast with you today. We've both just been huge fans of you since the beginning, and you set a great standard in the industry of doing the right thing and being a good guy, and I appreciate being able to watch you do that as well. So,
absolutely. You know, when I tune into your lives, I'm here to support, man. I'm 100% here to support. Thank you so much for being on today's podcast, and I know people will be checking out your website, be tuning into those lives on Instagram. I know you do them several days a week. You want to plug what frequency you do them on Instagram Live if people are trying to tune in?
We're live 5 nights a week, 8 to midnight pretty typically, but 3 nights a week are on Instagram. The others are kind of a wild card where we'll be, but we always post it on our Instagram story where that's going to be. So I appreciate you, Shane.
Yeah, fantastic, Derek. I look forward to being able to do like a year number two update sometime next summer. So we'll talk again soon, but thanks so much for being on the podcast.
All right, sounds good. Thanks a lot, Shane.
If you have a question for Shane or the podcast crew, you can always email them to podcast@GabrielThePlants.com for a chance for your question to be answered in an upcoming podcast episode. Send your questions to podcast@GabrielThePlants.com. Looking for your next house plan on a budget? We have one of the widest selections available at GabrielThePlants.com with hundreds of options grown just for you and ready to ship directly from our greenhouse to your house.